It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
Well, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey.
Hi, Wayne.
Good morning, Brad. Fly fishing in Arkansas here?
Yeah.
What's this about?
I've never done that before.
You fish for flies? Really?
No, you fish with flies.
Oh, with flies for what? Fish?
Trout.
Trout. Did you catch any?
I was fishing on the Little Red River with an Olympic gold fly fisherman. No pressure. I thought I was going to be, it's like totally, you know, I go over. I had only 20 minutes. I got two trout.
20 minutes of fly fishing
and
two trout.
Two trout.
How big?
I don't know, about so big.
Oh, okay. That works well on podcast. About so big. 10 to 12 inches, is that what you're saying?
Something like that. They were monsters. He caught like a big two-footer. He knew exactly its name and where it was. And I mean, I think they were old friends and stuff like that.
All of our listeners in Arkansas are going to go, what? Brad was in Arkansas?
I was in Arkansas.
Yeah.
Searcy.
His schedule's not public.
Searcy, Heber Springs, and Little Rock. Little Rock is pretty beautiful.
His schedule's not public. He just travels in and out of places to do business.
I was in and I was out. You know how they pick you up with a plane and that just grabs you and pulls you up?
See the newspaper this morning?
No, I don't read the newspaper.
Oh, I saw a little shot in the newspaper this morning. It said, illusionist to perform at church. And I thought, really?
That's not news.
That was my response.
Oh, that's bad. That's a cheap shot.
That was my response. Why is that news? And then, oh, he's admitting it. That's why. He's admitting it before the fact. So, I'm just kidding. We're having a little fun.
Welcome to Snarkyville.
Snarkyville today. Anyway, I got somebody I want to introduce to you, Brad, who's joined us this morning.
We have a studio guest. It did not.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is Mike Steele. Mike and I crossed paths 5-6 years ago, something like that.
Sounds right.
I never keep the date straight, but we crossed paths a bit ago, and we ran into each other again a couple years ago. And then in August, I get an email that sounded something like this at the end. It just said, just thinking of you and the profound way God has continued to use you in my life over the last 5+ years. He says, learning to fly regularly, no ministry, no house, no job, but I have found life. Mike Steele.
Ooh.
I'm going to pick up a phone and call this guy. What are you talking about? Last time I was with him,
fly fishing.
In a 5-bedroom house on a golf course, and you had a bunch of people, and you were part of a fairly significant ministry, at least in size.
International global takeover ministry.
And mm-hmm. then you end up here. So I thought, you know, I'd like to talk to him more. So he's come out to visit. He and his wife have come out to spend the weekend with Sarah and me.
That could be dangerous.
So we're having fun. No, really, for us, maybe. Not them. So
it's all about perspective there, Wick.
We picked them up at the library yesterday, or picked them at the airport yesterday, and then took them to the Reagan Library to do a little Ronald Reagan stuff. So, Mike, welcome to the God Journey.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here.
And your own God Journey, I'm assuming. You're on a pretty good one.
Trying.
If God takes all this stuff away from you, at least you lose all this stuff or
sounds
whatever.
Sounds like you're cliff diving.
Fly fishing. Fly fishing,
Are you the fly?
Yeah.
Get whipped around.
It does feel like that sometimes.
No, but he's into fly fishing, too. We were talking about that yesterday. He's into it in Colorado. So.
Oh, wow. I've never done it before. I was so afraid I was going to hook myself in the back of the head or somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, trying to whip that thing around. You're just going like, I don't know.
So this was first time ever.
First time ever. I'm a complete novice.
This is Mike's new sport of choice, I understand.
When you have a lot of time to sit and think, a river is a good place to do it.
Do you use waders and go right in?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We were out in front of a little boat. I was glad I didn't fall in. See, I was afraid I wasn't going to catch nothing, and then I was afraid I was going to fall in. But I stayed in the boat, and I was able to do it. That's fun.
About 3 years ago, one of my good friends put a rod in my hand, and a beginner's luck threw it just perfectly. And the fly was about 6 inches off the water, and a native cutthroat came up and grabbed it out of the water. And it hit the water, and I was hooked.
That sounds like a guy in a suit.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Wasn't the object to hook the fish? You got it.
Was that a fish, a native cutthroat?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I just, it sounded like a business guy.
That's one of the great things about Colorado.
You're going to go there, are you?
Just, you went with the illusionist.
So when I met you, you were part of a ministry that was trying to facilitate Mouse Church stuff in the country?
Yeah, for several years we were involved just trying to help folks get networked and find a new way of expressing body life. And in that expression, it tended to be smaller and found itself in homes, but it also found itself in all kinds of different venues.
Yeah.
And in that process, just trying to help people find Jesus. But the house church thing was kind of the main focus. And so it kind of took eyes sometimes off of the main prize.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How does that happen?
Busy. It's how our culture measures success.
And you were the funder. I mean, you were part of a foundation or at least spending some foundation money to help this thing happen.
Well, there was a foundation, several foundations that supported the work that we did in trying to network people together about the house churches.
Okay.
But, and so, yeah, we were able to help facilitate some people's stuff as they were getting started. But
and we kind of crossed paths in that environment, and you were trying to recruit me, impress me. What were you trying to do?
Well,
that's a setup.
Yeah.
You just stepped in a bear trap.
No, he hasn't stepped in it yet. He's still thinking about it. Leave him alone.
Sorry.
Leave him alone.
Sorry. Just fair warning.
This is where it goes really silent, because the best lesson to learn is to be quiet and let Jesus kind of give you an idea of what might be the best thing to say so that he doesn't get you in trouble.
That has never helped me. Okay. So if I'm supposed to hear that, it's not a word.
Yeah.
but we have had fun.
And it has been fun. And I would say that probably the greatest gift was getting a hold of some of Wayne's books. And realizing that no matter what you do, whether it's house church or prayer ministry or anything, they're all great, but they don't really lead you back into that place. They can be an outgrowth of walking with Jesus. But once they become the foundational part or the focus of your attention, then you might not be as focused on Jesus. And so I was really curious about this guy. He was a bit snarky, as you like to say.
He has a gift to snarky. Yeah.
And humiliating.
And so I went over to his house, and he makes great barbecue. Now, that's the secret. You always get great barbecue.
And chocolate chip cookies.
And man, we hit it on that big time. But the conversation actually confused me that night, because I realized that
I have that gift. That's a gift I recognize.
I know this history.
I realized that at that point, I might have placed the house church stuff a little higher in my priority list than Jesus, and that probably it was confusing my walk in the process. So it created a real point of contention in my own spirit.
Just explain that on a personal level. I mean, because I know you have no axe to grind. It's not the house church. But what was that doing for you when you said you got confused? What were you hungering for, and what was getting confused?
I grew up in a very conservative evangelical family who just wanted to serve Jesus. And I think my whole understanding was that the best gift you could give God was your act of service. Okay. And so the more you could serve him, the more happy he would be with you, and that would allow you, that would bring pleasure to God and therefore pleasure to you.
That's the third part of the equation that they assume.
Yeah. And not knowing any different, I just went about doing it to the best of my ability. And then, I was hearing this message that basically said, God wanted me and not what I did.
Yeah.
And that confused me. Because there was no box to put that in. It wasn't surrounded by anything. It was standing out there by itself. You can just sit and listen and rest and know that Jesus will lead you, take you where he wants you to go. And that was what he started speaking into my spirit. I'll take you where you want to go. And at first I thought I knew where I wanted to go. And that had to do with the outcomes that were a part of the ministry work. But what I realized was that wasn't very satisfying. There was something missing in my own heart and life, and probably a validation that I didn't get from the ministry work that I was looking for. And probably the way I would describe it now is a father's love and recognizing a father's love. So as I began reading some of Wayne's Contraband, I found that
what?
I found that it was resonating
I
with my spirit.
Pretty honestly accurate.
The one that really messed me up was He Loves Me. And that began a very long journey about love. And, you know, I have a beautiful wife who I've been married to for almost 35 years and the love of my life. And I have two beautiful kids that I love immensely. And I thought I knew about love, but what I realized was there was no, I hadn't experienced what it meant to be loved. I knew that I was giving love, but I don't think I knew what it was to be loved. Now, it wasn't that my wife wasn't loving me, my kids weren't loving me, and friends weren't loving me in the way they knew how. There was something just missing. Yeah. And so when I read He Loves Me, I kind of got angry, to be honest. There was a bit of...
I've heard this story before, too. Not the only one that came out that way, yeah.
There was a bit of, I think I've been lied to. I think I've been lied to. And as I went through that whole hashing out in my own spirit about what I was so in angst about, I realized that probably, and that what kept haunting me was, get away from me, I never knew you. It just kept haunting me. And I'm thinking,
yeah, that's a disturbing verse.
Oh, man. Yeah, where'd that come from? And I didn't put it there, so I was wondering, how does that thing get, what's going on here? I never knew you. I never knew you. And I went, my word, I've given my whole life to this. What do you mean? And so that was the first time I think I actually started getting a little upset with God. How come down this path? How come? You've heard all those things before.
Come on.
And you got to kind of work through all that stuff and realize, that wasn't about God. God wasn't doing that. That was just a perception that you had based on experiences, culture, church, religion, history, all that stuff.
We're given that formula that, you know, if you don't hear His voice and you're not being led by that, then we have all the good principles that we're taught. Right. And they're not bad. It's just they sort of set up that formula. Serve God, that gives Him pleasure, ergo, won't I enjoy that too? I'll have that, you know, attaboy patted on my back. Yeah. And then when the attaboy doesn't quite come in sufficient measure, you sort of feel like, man, I'm working really hard and this is not working.
You keep getting to the point where you think you've achieved some measure of success, but that measure of success doesn't find any fulfillment in your own soul, your own spirit. And so there's an emptiness that causes you to say, there must be something else. There must be more. And of course, being a good church-going guy, that's what I heard every Sunday, right? There's something else, there's something more. And so if you give your heart to Jesus, then you'll find that. And when you find Jesus, then you will find your place of ministry and fulfillment. And that was the answer to life. And it wasn't.
Yeah, except that it doesn't work.
It wasn't.
That's the only problem with that. And it really gives us, and I think even when we talked a lot about some of the house church stuff that you've been involved in, it seemed like when we get doing something for God, it seems to take us to the place you're describing instead of, we've used that language a lot, how do we work with Him? What is God doing in my life, and how do I just follow Him today, which is a very different way to live than I'm trying to. I know for me, years it was, I'm trying to be one of God's special kids doing better stuff for Him than other people are doing for Him, and you get into that whole comparative sense of, I've got to be doing more for Him than you're doing, at least more genuine stuff than you're doing. All that really false plate, like you're saying, it does nothing for the inside. It just leaves you empty.
Well, I was afraid you were going to find out. you were going to find out it wasn't as perfect as it was, and or that it should be.
You were afraid I was going to find that out?
Anyone would find out. Anyone.
Okay.
Yeah. And at that point, you feel the embarrassment of exposure because life isn't that clean. Life isn't that perfect. And there are all kinds of things that begin to fall apart. You know, will you continue to be able to measure up to other people's expectations? Will you continue to have the perfect family that lives perfectly? Will you continue to be able to say the right things at the right time to get the right people involved in the right things in order to get the right results?
And you're even being measured by a certain amount of financial, and what's that financial returning to me in terms of the investors or the people that are participating with you? I mean, there was a very specific outcome people were looking for that had to be measured in terms of the dollar spent. So I mean, that takes the whole performance thing to a different level, I think.
Yeah, when you get slogans like where God resides, God provides, and things like that. So, you know, if God's truly in it, then the money is going to be there for it, and then the money isn't there for it. And everybody has an expectation of continuing income or something like that, then it appears that God has...
That's when we change the slogan.
Yeah, God has removed his hand, right? And when God removes his hand...
Then the enemy's attacking us. Then, it's not God removing his
then
hand.
Then you've got a question, what did I do wrong? And so you live with a tremendous burden that you're carrying about doing everything right. And I'm not that good, guys. In fact, now that the veil is off, yeah. you know, you find out that you're pretty frail as a human being. And it really is a place of great exposure. As my buddy Ken is fond of saying, you might be finally getting over yourself.
Ooh.
And
I'd hang out with that guy a little more. Sounds like
I've been hanging out with him now for over a dozen years, and it's the best thing I've done.
Fill in some of your backstory just quickly, just so you started out in vocational. You were a computer geek, startup company guy out of Silicon Valley kind of a thing.
I was very fortunate to have a very smart brother.
Yeah.
And
everyone needs one of those.
It's very helpful. And basically, he brought me along in the process with him, and it was a blast, actually. We did very well together. We had a very successful integration business in Silicon Valley and ended up expanding to 14 different cities around the nation.
Wow.
And
but as you said, the thought in your heart was, we'll be successful in business so then we can go into ministry.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The whole goal really was to find a way to serve the Lord, to please him, and to see our lives count, to see our lives really make an investment in the kingdom.
Yeah.
So we did that for a while, and then Steve received a call from his family member at that time and asked him to come and help with a ministry. And so he left the business, and at that time we took in several million dollars of VC money into the computer
venture
company.
Venture capital, for those that don't understand fancy business language.
And the whole purpose for that was to, again, accelerate the business so that it could be standalone. And at that point then also I left the business. And honestly, I didn't really know where I was going to head. We moved from California to Colorado, and I took my kids there and wanted to raise them out in the country. So we bought 40 acres of land and started a little country ranch type deal and raised the kids out there. And it was during that time that I then got exposed to some international ministry work. And in that process, found the church planting stuff going on and said, it makes sense to me that if there's a body of believers that's available, reachable by most of the people on earth, then there's an opportunity for them to hear Christ. So that was the direction I headed. Pretty simple.
Yeah. So now you're doing that for a number of years, and then you're having this reevaluation time or this disturbed part of your journey. Huh?
Yeah, in the middle of the house church planting stuff, there were some incredible measures of success achieved, and there were a lot of good things that happened, and that was exciting. But as the numbers build, the expectations build, and you know, there's all kinds of things probably that I put on myself more than others put on me, because you have this desire to accomplish something for everyone.
If that's how fruit is being measured, we can get addicted to that without knowing that that's how God is measuring it.
Yeah. And at the bottom of it was always pleasing Jesus. This must make him happy to see people come into the kingdom. And I think it does. But what was happening was that was becoming a bigger and bigger snowball. And the bigger the snowball got, the harder it was. It wasn't rolling downhill. It was going uphill. And I felt like the one at the bottom kind of trying to push in. And that wasn't true. But, you know, again, you get kind of psyched out sometimes and things get out of kilter. So as I began to reevaluate that, I said, what do I really want to say to my kids about life? And what I wanted to say to them is it is truly all about Jesus. And it is truly all about hearing his heart, understanding that I coined a phrase and it's very sacrilegious, but forgive me. Jesus is a blabbermouth. He is always speaking to you. The problem is you're a little hard of hearing. And so if you would just slow down enough to listen, you will be able to hear God's heart, and there you'll find contentedness. They didn't like the blabbermouth part. But Jesus is always speaking. That's my belief. And the problem is I'm hard of hearing. So what I wanted to do was hone in on what I was hearing. The problem was everything I was hearing was kind of sitting juxtaposed to what I was doing. And so something had to die.
That's where our hard of hearing is developed.
Yeah.
It's going, nah, next.
Yeah, something had to die. And I decided, at least for me, and everybody's journey is different. If there's anything I've learned at this point, everybody's journey is different. God speaks in a billion different ways, and don't try to put your garbage on someone else.
Yeah. Yeah.
But at that point, for me, it was the doing had to die. And in my spirit, my sense was, Mike, do you love me? Let go. If you love me, let go. But Lord, if I let go, what do I hold on to? Well, actually, it's a free fall.
Yeah, that's the scary part.
And that was the beginning of the undoing that's still really continuing to this day. The rawness is gone, I think, but there's no question that every day feels like we're just starting this journey. And again, some of the terminology that one of the things that I felt the Lord brought to me was a whole terminology about old country and new country. And I kind of saw a person in their old country, a war-torn land, where they escape that war, the onslaught of what's going on in their lives, and they go out to sea in a boat, and they've lost everything, their job, their home, their security, their sense of connectedness, and now they're out in the middle of the ocean floating, wondering where they're going to end up. And that's kind of been the picture of what I think has happened to me over these last 5 years. And so as I watch that picture unfold in my life, there's only one place to go for the answers. And that's, a little overcast here in California this morning, Lord. A really gorgeous day, actually. It's very comfortable. I get to wear my shorts, which I had to put away a week ago in Colorado because the first snow came. And I am really thankful to be with some people that I care deeply about but haven't really got to know yet that I'm looking forward to get to know. And I'm thankful for that experience. It is Friday, or is it Saturday now?
Saturday now.
It is Saturday now.
All day today.
And I'm going to let today unfold. Will you just show me what you have for me? And that's enough. No more. Not where are we going to live next week? When are you going to give me a job? When are we going to do the thing that you've created us for? That's all, thankfully, sitting on a bookshelf somewhere. And we'll pick up the book when the Lord says, grab that book. Right now it is, hey, I get to meet Brad today.
You seem at peace with that. Having white-knuckled myself to a similar place,
yeah.
What talk about that? I mean, that's a grand distance from corporate America or business role within ministry towards church plan. I mean, you've had a whole bunch of different places that defined you. On a little boat drifting in the middle of the ocean wondering, hey, Jesus, what's we doing today? How have you personally fared in terms of just your sense of you?
When I had it all together, a friend had come up to me and he said, you know, one day you will curse God
And oh, gee, Chris.
And I, a friend?
Wow.
And
one of Job's guys.
Must be Ken, again.
he said, "You are much too together, and God will undo you." And he was right. And the pain of that led to, I know the podcast, you said kids listen to the podcast, so I'll stay
keep the language
in the safe place.
My daughter appreciates that.
Yeah. But there was basically, why did you do this to me? Sure. Why? I mean, 30 years of lies, 30 years of misunderstanding, 30 years of totally missing the mark. Are you kidding me? And it got very earthy. It got very difficult. I questioned love. I questioned relationships. I questioned journeys. I questioned intentions. I questioned everything that could be questioned, I think. And once you got to the end of the arguments, there was a tremendous peace, a comfort that came where I just broke. Mm. And wept.
Sure.
And it was at that point that I think I would say, well, the rebuilding started, if you will. And it started, I mean, come on, guys, at that time I had 4,000 books on my shelf and had gone through seminary and done all the stuff. And so I had answers for everything. Now none of the answers fit. And so we started with the basics, love, relationships, peace. And they were hard. They were hard because I had to question, do I love my wife? I thought I did. I sure tried these last 30 years to love my wife. But why now am I asking that question? Hmm. Shouldn't that have already been answered? And God took me to a whole different place of understanding, I think, foundationally what love was and what relationships are and all of those things. And during that process, I kept running into Lifestream blog and stuff like that. Henry Nouwen has written some really cool stuff on the heart, and I really enjoyed his writings.
Yep.
And then there was a point where God said, "Will you put all those books down?"
Yeah, even those can become.
As Wayne would say, I had a nudge in my spirit. I am not a charismatic, so I forget that sometimes people say that, and it sounds really weird. Yeah. The thing that captured me was, as I sat down who I was and what I was reading and what I knew and got rid of all of that, God was able to start speaking something different into my spirit. And I would sit for days, months, and just listen and ask the Lord, what now, Lord? Today is Monday and the sun is out, and I wonder what you have for me today. And I would go up to the river, and I'd put my waders on, and I'd pretend to be catching a trout when actually what I was doing was looking at the mountains and going, oh, this is where you hang out. I get it. You know, you made a lot of pretty places and this is one of them. And so I think God was fishing in the river with me there.
Right.
And I just get lost. And next thing I know, it'd be totally dark. I couldn't even see my hook, my line, my fly. And I was still standing in the water and I realized, he was there.
Yeah.
That changed everything. And that became the longing. And the first thing you want to do, of course, is fix it all for everybody in your family and your friends and everything. And that fails miserably.
That one really is a mistake.
Yeah.
Pretty sure that's not something huge. He asked you to go like, now that you really have enjoyed me, go fix everyone else.
And so then you become very quiet. And there's actually a place of contentedness in that I didn't. I mean, I was a goer, man. I was a doer. Mm-hmm. 12, 14 hours a day. Constant action, motion, doing.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden it was quiet. And I had never heard that quiet. And I felt loved. So I began to talk to my wife, who seemed to already have a sixth sense about it. She was doing pretty good with all that. And I resigned from the ministry work and went to work with a few friends, but not really to make money, just to kind of help out. And those lasted for a little period of time, but what was really drawing me was the quietness. And so I quit doing everything. I just felt like there was something I wasn't aware of that Jesus was trying to say to me that I couldn't find as long as I was doing. It's because I'm a hard-headed, hard-of-hearing guy. Yeah. And he, you know, he had to push harder with me than he probably has to do with most. But all of a sudden, I found myself sitting quietly, and my wife came in, and she said, I feel compelled to go back to work. So she went back to work and said, I want you to just sit and listen to Jesus. So I've been given the greatest gift over the last year that I've ever had.
Wow.
And I didn't know this was going to be this hard.
Really? I didn't either.
She has been the tangible expression of what's been going on in my spirit.
Well,
I've seen that love just bursting forth as she puts on, you know, the uniform to go to work. And it's a retail environment, so, you know, she has to deal with people's idiosyncrasies every day.
That's a kind way of saying that.
Yeah. And I just get to sit and listen to Jesus and catch a few trout and build a deeper and deeper relationship with her and my daughter and my son-in-law, who I just love to death. And there's something formulating, something that's much different than anything I've ever experienced that is just so... I think it's freedom.
Amazing. When you have all the stuff people want, high profile, money to spend in ministry, you feel like you're doing something significant for God in the world. You're talking about this inner emptiness. Now, what intrigued me, when I called you after your email, here I lost all that, lost position, lost influence. Through that, you lost some friends too. I mean, people that were close to you aren't as close to you, and you're not on the same task. And I think everybody's found that out who've been part of task-based relationships. I'm not on the task anymore. I'm not significant to the people I thought cared about me. And you've been through some of that.
Yeah, I think I would say it this way. You become, at least the perception is that something weird has happened to you because you're no longer motivated by what brought you together with those folks in the first place.
Yeah, right.
And it's when that motivation dies, you just can't keep going that direction. Yeah. No matter, you love the people. It's the people didn't change.
Right.
Something's going on inside of you that says that isn't motivating anymore.
Yeah.
And once you lose that motivation, and that's all you've ever known.
Yeah.
I mean, I started working when I was 8 years old. So without something to motivate you, you're kind of wandering for a moment.
Yeah.
Well, if that's been a defining piece, which I think it is, I think that's ingrained in a lot of our culture, yeah, especially for guys. I don't know that women are quite as driven or defined, yeah, that way, but I know that a lot of guys are. When all of a sudden you take that off, it's incredibly disorienting because that's always at least been a point of definition.
Right.
And when that's no longer, when... I mean, you talked about the whole bit, I feel like I've been lied to. I something resonated in me, but I realized I don't know that I was ever lied to because I don't know that any of the people I was listening to knew.
And that's the best way to say it.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the truth is I felt burned because I kind of went, gosh, all this energy in the wrong direction is not effective. And that, you know, you feel like, what a waste. But the frustrating thing is there was no one I really could point to that was deceiving me. No, they're sincerely believing that was the path. And I finally just went, I don't think it is. And it's really hard to have those relationships when all of a sudden you're changed. Because now that may not be what God has done in them yet or whatever. But now you're a commentary on them and you're not even trying to be. So it just makes it really awkward.
Yeah, well said. Well said. Yeah, that's the hardest part is that you want to continue to love and care for the people, but you find that everything you say sounds like a spur.
And a front to what they're doing.
Yeah.
You're just flowing in a different direction, and they hear it as criticism where it's like, gosh, and I don't know how in the world you're supposed to share those things, and I don't know how they're supposed to hear them. So I've stopped getting really irritated with people that, you know, when all of a sudden my river seems to have been directed down a different tributary, just going like, gosh, Lord, we get so much of our validation from each other that when all of a sudden you bust a different move that you think you're supposed to do, even if you're wrong, it's like, can't some relationships give you the freedom to check that out?
Well, because you don't know what you're doing anyway. You just have this sense.
To explain.
You can't even explain it. And the things you say, you trip over, and it causes the others to think you're out of your mind. And you are. You don't.
Yeah.
You're
trying
not in the same place you were in.
No, and you're not being motivated by the same things we shared so deeply. Yeah. Now, you went from, you know, part in a multi-million dollar computer company to high-profile ministry to last 5 years letting go of some thing.
Yeah.
You generally don't own a home today.
No, we live in the extra bedroom in my daughter's house.
Your married daughter's home, yeah.
Yeah.
And your wife's working.
Mm-hmm.
You're just involved sorting out what's next in your journey for Jesus and God's...
Yeah, sorting me out. See, the truth is not only is it not together, there's a reality that God and I have very transparent conversations now. And and we... I'm trying to bring it down to brass tacks. Not only is my act not together, I'm regularly questioning the things that he's revealing to me because there's so much that has to be undone in my life. There's so many things that as he shows them to me, my understanding of his life, my understanding of how to walk with him, my understanding of how to treat other people. Guys, I've been a total mess in all those areas. I am not together at all.
Yeah.
And so
congratulations.
So we have some very honest conversations about, God, I don't really like that person. And I don't think that's right for me not to have even a spark of compassion for them. What happened to my compassion? Lord, I am full of myself today. I got to get over myself here. Lord, I'm just kind of ticked off at you today. As I look back at what was my perception of what happened to me in that particular environment or circumstance, I think I was mistreated and I think you let it happen. And so there's some stuff that, I mean, that's all, when I'm in my right mind, if I can say it that way, when I'm really tuned in to where Christ is walking with me, I look at those things and say, oh my word, that's just so unimportant based on what he's doing in my life. But every one of those moments, I think every now and again, he'll just bring one up and I get to look it in the face. And usually what's behind it is my total misunderstanding of what he was trying to do in my life at that point. So it really wasn't anyone else's fault. It really wasn't anything other than my own misunderstanding. And so he's rearranging my thinking. And somebody asked me the other day, well, how do you hear Jesus? And I made the fatal mistake of sharing with them, trying to describe it in the only way I knew how. It turned out that in his tradition, that was the common language that they used. And he said, oh yeah, I've heard all that stuff for 25 years. That doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, oh man, that's the only way it works for me. So I'm trying to understand how to listen well enough that when I express something to someone, it's because Jesus has given me their language. And so the way I describe that is I'm asking the Lord for a new language that expresses his heart to whoever I'm talking to, which requires me to really tune in before I begin to blurt out. And as Wayne knows, I blurt out before I tune in. So I'm trying hard to get to the point where it's more about tuning in and then speaking from that place than it is just off the cuff, because I'm a great off the cuff guy and I really want you to understand me, and I'm hoping you will, but you know, I don't care anymore.
See,
that's freedom.
That one element, I think that's one of the biggest difficulties, because I think it's hard to diagnose that. I mean, the fact that you can actually put language to it, I think you've been marinated in that for a while. I think it's hard to recognize just how much validation that we really do desperately need and try to extract from others. You know, I mean, I think the worst thing on the planet is to be sincere and to be sincerely misunderstood and somehow be okay with that.
Right.
Nobody taught me how to be okay with that.
Exactly.
You're just going like, wait a minute. No, and then the more you try to prove, the more it does not go in the direction you
want
it all. Sure. It's just, it's like you're just digging a ditch going like, dude, you know, can I take the shovel out of your hands?
Yes.
You know,
foot and mouth disease.
it's really hard to be in a place where you're just kind of at peace there, whether someone else does or doesn't, or whether Jesus gives you the language to share or not. I've realized I can only bear witness to what is going on in me. I don't know that that is what God is going to do in somebody else. It's no longer a principle to apply in them. It's no longer an experience that they must then share. And that is not the lemming validation way that we have walked as a herd.
To live, oh, yeah. Man, you're sitting on something that's so huge, because before I was seeking an audience. Now I actually sit and God brings people to me that can hear my heart. So I don't have to pursue an audience anymore. I ended up in...
That's huge.
Oh, I got to tell you. And it's fascinating because you can actually just speak from your heart and people hear it. And you're kind of amazed. The first time it happened, I was so amazed because they actually understood what I meant. And it was just a small group of people. I had just had the privilege of being invited to share with, you know, a dozen or so folks. And they actually understood. And then another person called on the phone from out of the past, and we had the most incredible, deep conversation in a matter of 30 minutes that I had. And all of a sudden, there was another guy who I ran into, and we were having a great conversation. And I realized I didn't do a thing to enter into their spheres of influence. It just happened.
Yeah.
And as it unfolds like that, you realize – I guess what it does is it helps to validate where you can be valuable or where the expression of your life in Christ can be received. And I think that's a big thing. I think we try too hard to convince everybody, and I don't think that's what God really intended.
I think those moments were probably life-giving because you didn't need to be validated much.
Not at all.
You know, I mean, I think... And it's like, only God can displace that. I don't know how you repent of that. You know, yeah. Lord, I repent of my need to be validated. Well, okay, that doesn't change anything. until I know his love is in there and displaces that, that's not an area you can fix.
Yeah, your expression earlier, if you love me, let go. When you're saying that, what I'm hearing is, I can't let go till I know you love me. That's where I really let go. I know part of it is at times, yeah, you just let go, trusting that he's going to love you and you're not going to be lost in this place anymore you think is so important. But for me, I think the places where I really let go is because I know he loves me. So even if it is a free fall, even if I lose everything that I thought was important to me, I get the better thing. You know, that's if you lose your life, if you're going to save your life, you lose it. And if you lose it for my sake, you find it. I think that's exactly what he's talking about. And I think that's what I love about your story is you're in the middle of that. You're in the middle of losing everything just about. And now, but you've gained something greater. There's a greater contentedness and a greater excitement about the new country you're going to. And you don't see it all yet. You don't even, but it isn't even important to see it. Like you're saying, if I wake up in him today, that's enough. And that's what will take my life to where it needs to be.
I don't think we can, for me, I don't think I can receive God's best by planning it out.
Yeah.
I think his best comes when I awaken to it, rather than try to understand where he's going to take me and try to grab hold of something and help him get me there.
Yeah. Most people think God's will is a strategy.
Yeah.
So I got to get the strategy, then I can work it. Instead of, I really think God's will unfolds. It just unfolds inside the relationship. And if we're having that, then things that will come our way will be involved in things that just come up in his time. And if we're trying to get a strategy and then implement it, we'll mess it up in so many ways. It's just scary. It's scary how many ways we can do that. Well, we've made everybody miss their bus stops and everything today.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Have a great day. We planned that.
Yeah. Thank you, Mike, for sharing with us today. Appreciate you opening your heart.
Thank you for traveling with us on The God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.